Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Hometown Hero Outdoors is thankful to work with these partners. Hometown Hero Outdoors is glad to partner with the veteran-owned Best Defense Armory and Range in Forest Lake, Minnesota as our preferred firearm supplier. They also offer a state-of-the-art indoor firing range that is open to the public. Visit them at bdarmoryandrange.com to browse their inventory. Here are your hosts, Daniel Meyer and Chris Tatro.
All right, happy Wednesday and welcome back to the HHO podcast. Chris and I tonight have a special guest. We've got a huge supporter of ours and friend. We've got Eric Mossberg, who's the owner of Best Defense Armory Range in Forest Lake, Minnesota. Eric is a veteran of the Minnesota Army National Guard, where he joined as an infantryman, served his time with the National Guard as an infantryman, and then kind of moved into a few different roles there with the recruiting side of things, and then also the training aspect with the National Guard. Eric suffered an injury while he was on his deployment to Iraq that caused some pretty lifelong injuries that he suffered. Thankfully, he's doing a lot better now. I'll let him go into his personal story about that. Chris, have you got anything that you want to talk about Eric before we let him introduce himself?
Yeah. So then Eric retired from the military, and then we met right before he retired. And since his retirement, he began his business with Best Defense Army Range in Forest Lake, which has been very involved with HHO over the almost 4.5 years now. Going on 5, and he's been a huge supporter of us, and we appreciate you very much, Eric. So thanks for being on the show tonight, and why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners and give them some of your background when it comes to military stuff.
Yeah, hi. So I'm Eric Mossberg. Just like they said, I'm a retired military guy, so I was a staff sergeant. I retired in 2019. I was injured in 2011. While I was overseas, and several years later, I started to have a lot of complications from the injury with, as far as blood flow goes. Had over 27 blood clots, 2 in my lung and 1 in my heart. So I spent a long time trying to figure out how to recover from this, what was next, why this was happening. Spent about 18 months at the Mayo Clinic down in Rochester, trying to essentially save my limb from the injury. While at the same time, this just caused a lot of issues, obviously, with me still being active duty for the Minnesota Guard. So I looked at medically retiring out of it just because I couldn't physically do everything, as well as it was causing a lot of mental and physical issues that just did not allow me to do my job. After like 18 months, kind of just figured out I lost about 60% normal blood flow back to my foot from my calf, and ultimately made the decision with the doctors to amputate below the knee of my leg. So I was ready for it, not really anticipating how difficult my life was going to be. I didn't wake up without a leg, so thank God there was that. I knew this was coming. I had a long time to talk to others that were amputees just to get their insight, which honestly helped calm things down a little bit for myself as far as the decision goes. The first, I guess, 2 years now, going on 2 years in October, the first year was pretty brutal. A lot of just change, right? I left the military from working out all the time and feeling good and in shape to missing a leg and gaining a bunch of weight and not being able to do stuff on my own. So it's been quite the journey over the last almost 2 years now of just trying to get what sense of normal life I can have. And the last 6 months have been really good. I have my ups and downs all the time, but things are getting a lot better as far as what I'm able to do and how I'm feeling both physically and mentally.
Yeah, I know before you got the amputation done, there was a ton of times where, you'd be wanting to go do something and just couldn't because the blood clots and problems with your leg, just you weren't able to. And then, from an outsider perspective, when when you did get the amputation and, you know, got healed up, got the prosthetic properly fitted, it seemed like pretty quickly you were able to at least do a little bit more than what you were doing.
Yeah, definitely. I've been, you know, like I said, I went from being very active to not being able to do anything. And then the more the leg is fit and the more I've forced myself to be active, it's just helped with being able to heal faster. I mean, I got my, it's a different world now, I'd say. Like, you know, I look back and I think about it all the time when I had my leg. You know, there's days where even when I was in pain or it was so swollen or I had a blood clot, I could still just like get up out of the bed and at least like walk to the kitchen, you know, and I still take that for granted sometimes, you know, when I take my leg off or have to get in my wheelchair now in order to go to the kitchen and whatnot. But it's, you know, to be honest, it's humbled me a lot as far as, you know, what I can do, you know, what I change anything, probably not. I'd still do it the same way. And, you know, I'm just learning to live and do more and not let this be like an obstacle for me healing and getting back to normal. I mean, I was just the other day, I was outside playing football with my son. And 2 years ago, I couldn't, you know, I'd get home from work and I was in just so much pain. That was the last thing I was trying to do was go be active. And now I'm a lot more active. I'm in a veteran amputee volleyball every Tuesday and I'm golfing every Monday. And I'm just forcing myself to get out and do more, because the more I do and the more I focus on it, the faster I've healed and the more I've just been able to accomplish. Last week, I was out on Lake Minnetonka wake surfing, and I got up 6 times in the water, which last year I couldn't do that once. So that was a big win for me.
That's pretty awesome being able to do that. There's people with two functional, you know, legs that are born with that can't even do that. So
I can't. No, I'm not balanced enough. Well, that's pretty impressive. You know, and I remember distinctively when Eric was going through this, you know, and one of the things that he told me, like right to my face, and, you know, that really hit home was this blood clots and the issues that he was having was, I don't want to be playing with my children and all of a sudden this blood clot happens and I drop dead in front of my kids. And he goes, I can't live with that thought, you know, and that really hit home, you know, for me. You know, I have a lot of kids, you know, and just thinking that, that's in the back of this guy's mind, like, holy crap, you know? So having to make that mental hurdle to amputate your leg, you know, we were there for a lot of that with you, you know, but obviously it's a decision that you had to make and be comfortable with between you and your wife and other family. So that was a pretty crazy time. And I'm sure, you know, it's been a challenge since. And like we've talked about, you're overcoming, but one observation is watching you actually move through this and being able to get back on your feet, so to speak, and move forward and overcome these obstacles is pretty impressive. A lot of fun to watch.
Quick sidetrack. I don't think we've ever told the listeners how many kids you do have, Chris. He's got a whole squad of people over there.
Yeah, I do. We're a blended family, so we have 7 kids. Got 3 of my own. My wife has 3, so my stepkids, and then we have 1 together. So Eric, you got a little ways to go.
Yeah, you've got two kids, right, Eric?
Yeah, I just got 2, and they're a lot of work in themselves. So especially my son,
Ragnar.
Yes,
from
son's name is Ragnar. Yep.
All the Facebook posts, you guys have your hands full with him.
Yeah, I give it up to my wife. That's why she's at home now, because they're busy and they need to be in sports and be active. Otherwise, they'd go crazy.
Yeah.
Zanetta is Eric's wife, and she is a phenomenal person too. Very supportive of Eric. And, you know, like any marriage, trials and tribulations, you know, like, but they every day make it through it. And Zanetta's there to support Eric and vice versa, especially with your endeavors with your business.
Yeah. I think she's there with you pretty much every event that you guys support Hometown Heroes with.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very supportive. We were just doing a charity cruise for another organization, and she was there. And she's just always willing to be there for me through the business and the business venture. And she's just understood what it takes to, you know, I guess be married to somebody that works all the time and wants to get stuff done. And she was a huge supporter even after I lost my leg. Like 2 weeks after the amputation, she brought me in my wheelchair into the shop where I should have just stayed at home, but I couldn't do it. So I went in anyways.
And that's how you are. You know, and for the listeners too, we haven't really covered how we met Eric. We ended up having a meeting in the White Bear Lake VFW. What was that meeting for again, Dan? I can't exactly remember.
It was just like a members meetup. Anyone was welcome to come.
Get some pizzas, hang out,
get some food, you know, get some drinks at the VFW and chit chat for a couple hours. And
the VFW put them in the basement.
Yeah.
And was super like creepy.
Me being like 6'3", couldn't stand up all the way.
Yeah. And Eric was there. And that's when we were talking about our upcoming banquet, I think. And that's when Eric chimed in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got the text like 30 minutes before you guys were even starting that I should come check it out. Another friend of mine that retired from the military that was saying that they might need somebody for guns. And you guys used a different vendor in the past and you just threw it out there. And I think I remember Chris saying, yeah, we'll use this guy. He's veteran owned. And I was kind of right in the beginning. I had just
I think that was like before you even had like officially bought the business, right?
Yeah. I was actually like technically working for the company I own now. Like it was kind of like a gray area transition in between ownership. So I was running the store, but I didn't officially own it at the time. So.
And you had both your legs.
And I had both my legs. Yeah. That's
true. Yeah. I remember that because we talked about the different firearms that we use for our different events to include our banquet. And then you had asked me that specifically, do you guys need someone? And I was like, yeah, we'll take you, you know, absolutely. And being that
I think what's been cool with what you've let me do is I've always wanted to, like, when it comes to firearm raffles, do something more than just your average, you know, cheap $500 gun out of the box, which is still great, you know, for people to win a free gun. But it's nice to the connection I've had with you guys to let me kind of go outside the lines a little bit and do some really cool, you know, firearms that we can still raise money on. And it's a night and day difference on when somebody gets a super nice or expensive or custom gun for the same price as, you know, that cheaper gun as well. And it just, I think it hits home a lot better. People, at least people I know, they're really excited to go to some of your guys' events when we're raffling guns off, because it's not just your generic thing.
Yeah, I think you know, out of all the guns that we've done with you, maybe 10% are just like straight out of the box, and then the rest have all been, you know, customized in some way. And then the Cerakote that you guys always put on them is top of the line. Everyone's always impressed at the various events when they get a look at them.
Got to give a shout out to your Cerakote guy.
Yeah, so we contract with Cerakoter Gun Runners. They're right out of Hugo. The gentleman that owns it and does all of our Cerakote is a retired first sergeant, active duty Army out of Fort Benning, Scott Yeager, and great guy. Always been there and been able to turn things around if we need them really fast or really slow, and he does a great job.
Yeah, last year's banquet, he did a couple. Well, he's done a lot of pieces for us, but I think he donated a good chunk of last year's Cerakoting jobs. But we had a couple of really cool rifles that we did. One of them was a pistol blackout, 300 blackout, and it was a Stormtrooper kind of styled one, you know, with white and black. It was unique. You know, there's not one out there like it. And then we did another AR, and that one was like OD green that was like battle worn with Army Star on it, and that was a pretty unique one, and they got into a pretty hot bidding war over that one at the banquet as well. I actually just talked to the guy who bought it, and I remember him specifically telling me, he's like, man, this is the only one out there, I'm getting this. And I mean, he got it, and beautiful firearm.
Oh yeah. part of the banquet that I think is most exciting is doing those live auction and seeing how many people want the different kinds of firearms, like even if they don't want it, just because, you know, the work that's been done to it, it's eye appealing for sure. And it might be one of the things that just sit on a shelf and they can look at for its lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, that's our goal, is to give a gun to somebody that doesn't ever want to sell it because it's so unique and so special to them. And, you know, it's the difference of, you know, some ARs are a dime a dozen. I got a bunch of them and I sell and buy them all the time, but there's those custom ones. they're hard to let go.
It's kind of funny that you say that too, because Shane Liberta, APS owner, is works an investor with Best Defense and Eric, and I think like Eric, Shane is like the number one like purchaser of our firearms. And what did his wife say? Stop buying your own guns from these guys.
Yeah, I'm probably something like that.
It was at the banquet. She had to. I watched a couple of times. She put his paddle up to Ben. She's like, nope, put it back. Put it down.
Slap back down.
Yeah, he's going on a lot of trips, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Shane's a good guy. I like Shane.
And then kind of want to touch on, you know, the story of, you know, the beginnings of Best Defense. You guys had to put in a lot of work when you first bought the business, you know, from, I can't remember what it used to be called anymore, but, you know, from the big fire that happened there and restoring everything and making it, you know, in my opinion, I think, you know, 100 times better than what it was with what you guys changed.
Yeah, it was definitely was and still is been a long journey. I got this idea about a year before I officially medically retired, from about 2015 and until now, and still continuing. I taught permit to carry classes, and I did a lot of stuff with firearms as a training NCO full time in the military. So just firearms were just appealing to me. I have two business degrees, and outside of the military and applying for a job at 3M or one of the Medtronic, one of the big companies in Minnesota, it just didn't seem like it was going to be fulfilling enough for me to just work for somebody else. So I kind of thought about building a gun shop in Wyoming, Minnesota, small strip mall location. I can just do general sales and, you know, have something on the side of my disability and retirement to just keep me busy. Cause, you know, I think all of us know as military people that we can't just sit at home and not work, or, you know, sitting at home leads to a lot of other bad things sometimes too. And just didn't want that to be a temptation for myself. And then, you know, oddly enough, I found out through the youth pastor of my church, who knew the old owner of, it was called Lakes Trading Company, and that he wasn't going to rebuild after the fire. Now, I had used this range in the past for some permits carry classes, so I was familiar with the range and where it was. And I had just moved to Wyoming, Minnesota, about 10 minutes from here, a couple years prior to getting out of the military. And I'm kind of just entertained, you know, what would it be like? I mean, that was my 10-year plan, was to maybe open a range and just have a bigger facility. But for now, a small little gun shop, brick and mortar would be good. And I just started dabbling in the people I knew. I had a lot of doors shut on me. I mean, I'd be the first one to say starting your own business, it's not as easy as people may think it is, right? I mean, it's especially when you're talking few million dollars to build a facility or buy a facility. I mean, unless you hit the lottery or something, most people don't have that kind of money sitting around. You know, you need 20% down, and it's a steep number. And so I just never thought, actually, to be honest, in my wildest dreams, that this would come so quickly like it did. I met the right people through a family member of mine that actually linked me up with Shane Liberta, who's one of my partners now. So we spent about a year just going over business plans and reports and numbers and inventory. And I mean, it was really stressful at times. I'm just like, oh, this is so much money. This is so much time I got to put into this. Like I wanted to quit, but I didn't, and had business partner issues in the beginning when I started, which, you know, a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to have business partners, but you need them sometimes if you can't afford it. So it's been quite the process. I'd say about a year ago, once this building was actually built and the range was up and we started moving, I mean, it was pretty rough. I mean, when COVID started and retail of people not going places and staying home, and what businesses are allowed to be open, which ones are, you know, essential or non-essential, we really took a hit. You know, manufacturers took a hit, so product was super scarce. It was hard to get stuff, and we really had to grind it out to try to get business and not go under as fast as we opened. So it was definitely challenging on that aspect.
You had some different ups and downs too, like you talked about with COVID, but during the riots that occurred here in the Twin Cities too, you know, that was, you know, just previous to the last presidential election too. And at that point, I think you guys had a pretty good run for a little while until the COVID came through heavy, right?
Yeah, so it's a double-edged sword, right? The riots were obviously a horrible thing to happen. They were there was a lot of people coming in impulse buying or just, you know, getting stuff that they need or thought they needed or needed to protect themselves. The problem was, because of all that, the pipeline already slowed down. So, you know, we had 2 good months where we almost sold 100% of our inventory and we could only replace about 20%. And after that, then it was, you know, it was a struggle. Struggle to keep employees, you know, with everything that's happened over the year. You know, unfortunately, it's bred a lot of people to resort to unemployment when they can work and it's just easier. So it's, we've been through quite a bunch of struggle just trying to get up and going and continue to go. And, you know, I'm happy to say today we have a really awesome crew, all the guys that and gals that work for us. You know, I hope to not lose any more, but I'm sure I will, and I'll get new ones. But we have a really good staff right now. I mean, a lot of veterans and LEO that work for us. Sean Lassard is my new manager. He's an 18-year Minneapolis SWAT guy, and just awesome resume, awesome record, and he's really helped just keep the vibe and the you know, forward progress moving.
Well, knowledge is everything too, you know, so like he brings a lot of that to the table.
It was a while back, I think, you know, six months or so, whenever I was in Minnesota last, Eric, you brought up, you know, you're not just trying to hire people that are there to work and that's okay. It, you know, you're trying to hire people that, you know, kind of become more like family as well. So, you know, finding, I'm sure it takes some ups and downs trying to find the perfect fit of people. I know the employees that come out and help out with the fundraisers that you do for us, and then, you know, the other organizations that you guys help out are all, you know, pretty top tier people.
Yeah, I mean, it's trying to hire like-minded people, you know, that have the same ideas and drive. You know, our thing is we're retail, so, you know, guns are fun and cool, but, you know, at the end of the day, customer service is number one, and you gotta want to be there and want to do your job. You know, the hardest part I've learned in the last year being a small business owner is, you know, you can only pay people what you can afford. And that's been, you know, the ups and downs. So creating a lot of good incentives for the guys and purchasing programs and just things that, you know, if you want to chase it, it's a win-win for both the business and them. And I think it just helps us foster a better environment that way too. There's no hostility. If you don't hit your sales goal, you don't get your bonus, you know, but if you hit it, you can, a lot of the guys are driving for these bonuses. Half of them spend half of it back in the shop and build cool guns anyways. So it's a win-win for me.
Like Mike.
Like, yeah.
Mike's another business partner, Eric, and man.
Every time I go in there, Mike's got something new, either some new gun or some new part on his gun. He's like, come on,
truck.
Watch this thing. Yeah, we're a new truck.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, Mike is our number one customer and partner and everything in the business. So
he's knowledgeable and he does really good at sales too. I mean, he's easy to get along with and he's a fun guy.
Yeah, Mike does all our custom builds. He's just got a wealth of knowledge and he loves building rifles. And that's what he and we do best. So.
Mike spends, you know, anywhere between $2,000 and $3,000 of my money every time I'm there. Like in his head, he does. It doesn't happen, but in his head, he does it. So, no, super nice guy. He knows a lot of good stuff. One thing I just want to talk about too is, you know, our listeners can't see right now, but Eric's actually sitting in his shop there, and they do have a state of the art facility, and we've got to use it a lot. You know, between not only I teach on the side for permit to carry with Eric, but also with HHO trips, you know, we'll host some range days there too. And Eric does have a state-of-the-art range where he is sitting currently in their VIP room where they actually have some high-end lanes that are there, and it's a little bit more of a lounge over there for the VIP side. Do you want to talk about that, Eric?
Yeah, so just like the employees, right, making it feel like family when you come in the shop and how you're greeted, you feel like you're part of the team. I mean, we created the VIP room. We have couches, poker table, half kitchen, and then three-lane private range where the shooting stalls turn up to 360 degrees. You can flash cop lights. I mean, it's just a different environment. You know, we have seven lanes on the other side that cost $20 to shoot, and they're just very basic and they're still very nice. But, you know, there's a lot of people, whether they're, you know, just avid shooters, law enforcement, a lot of business clientele that just like to come in here, use the facility, throw a party. We hosted, I think, that one of the virtual events for HHO here, probably the highlight of the year, or it's probably been the best event that we've had here. It was super fun. And
yeah, that place is packed wall to wall.
Yeah. I can't believe how many people we fit in here. And
you guys did some pretty cool stuff too. Like, you had different firearms available where you were able to have people, you know, essentially dump around a mag full of a fully auto firearm for X amount of money, and people got to do some unique stuff and be able to shoot some stuff they might have not done before.
Yeah, John Fedig from Engineered Silence in Blaine makes suppressors and full autos, and he brought that experience time and time again. Every time I call him, the guy, he just loves to bring and put a full auto in someone's hand and just see, you know. I don't know if anybody can not smile when they shoot one. I know Alicia, if she could afford it, would have kept shooting the full auto all day, but
get spendy after a little bit.
Yeah, you dump $8 in 6 seconds, it's
or as Alicia would call them, the freedom seeds.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the VIP lounge and the different memberships that you guys have there, if a business wanted to, you know, be able to do like monthly meetings or anything there, how would they, or what are the different options for them?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we offer it for anybody, members, non-members. We have just a general rate. Best thing I always tell people is just give me a call with what you're thinking. You know, our general rate for the entire range and the whole VIP room is $500 an hour. Sometimes it sounds expensive, but when you have, you know, 10 or to 20 people, it's $50 a person or less for a pretty big area. You know, but I offer better rates, especially during the weekdays. You know, Fridays and Saturdays are our busiest days, so it's full rates usually in effect, and we usually rent it out quite a bit right now. So, you know, law enforcement uses it quite often on our off days to do department training. So just growing that, but, you know, open to anybody.
Well, Platinum Bank, remember them? You had me come in and do that private class for Platinum Bank. They hosted a permit to carry for a lot of their clients and supporters. I think it was 20 people or so.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of different groups in. You know, I've had Bible studies, I've had bachelor parties. Yeah, Platinum Bank came in and did a permit to carry class, and we catered food in for lunch, and it was just, it's very personable, right? I mean, I hosted an event, or we were about to host an event for like Enterprise Car Rental. You know, I mean, you think about it, there's a lot of different things that people like to take their clients out, or business people, end of the year party. And, you know, I've had people say, oh, we were going to go to Dave & Buster's and play video games and drink, but shooting guns sounds so much better. So they do it instead. So it's just something different, right?
Yeah. 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 And, you know, and it's kind of going back to Eric and where he lives and his business is at. It's kind of interesting because it kind of comes full circle where, I grew up knowing Lakes Trading Company back in the day, and Eric moving to Wyoming, Minnesota is where I grew up. And, it was pretty funny because the first time I actually met Eric and went to his house, he actually, I pulled into his driveway and I looked next door at the house that's sitting just right next door. And I'm like, man, that's where my childhood friend grew up. I used to like sleep in that house when they were building it. So it's kind of interesting just how things come full circle with not only this range, getting to meet Eric, you know, where he lived, you know, just all that stuff. It's just amazing how how this world is a lot smaller than we think, you know, and the friendships that are built, you know, built through HHO or just even the military career. It's just a very small world and very cool to be able to foster these relationships and be able to support each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think when you say small world, that I've been feeling that every day and every time I do an event. I just did a charity cruise for United Heroes League that helps kids with hockey gear. And there was a lady on there that somehow recognized my name and I guess used to babysit me when I was 2 years old and is married to the guy that I was doing the fundraiser for. So it's just,
oh, cool.
It always amazes me how many people you run into and
super small
goes to show, like, even as a business owner, you got to be real. You got to be authentic. You can't lie. You got to do, if you do it the right way, because, you know, at least for me, I swear I can't go anywhere without running into somebody that I know. And, you know, I never want to let anybody down.
Yeah, no, and we really appreciate all your support. I know we can kind of transition a bit. You've actually been on a handful of our trips, right?
Yeah, a couple. I went ice fishing for the first time last year, which was super cool.
Where'd you get to go before? Which one did you go to?
I went to the one on Mille Lacs with the, what was it, the Black Hole guys?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. Was that on Mille Lacs? I think it was right next to Mille Lacs Lake.
Shakopee. Shakopee Lake in Onamia. Is that right?
Yep. Shakopee Lake. Yep. That was it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That was super fun. I went sturgeon fishing this last year.
Was it a hard water or in a boat?
It was on the St. Croix.
You were in a boat though, right?
Yep.
So that'd been last fall, last October probably. Yeah. Sturgeon fishing. I remember.
The coolest trip I ever went on was that bow fishing, the bow fishing trip. I'll never forget that. I mean, I love guns and that was like shooting fish with a bow was different. It was a lot of fun, especially in the middle of the night. I just, you know, for someone that like me that didn't really grow up fishing, I do a lot of hunting. It was really cool because the guide was just super knowledgeable. And, you know, for me, for the first time, you know, it was more like fish identification. You know, I got to learn from the water, like what every type of fish looked like and what not to shoot at. So,
yeah, it's hard doing that, you know, making sure, like, you just want to shoot. I know the first time I went, I was like, man, I just want to shoot every, like, I see a fish, I want to shoot this thing. Get as much practice in as possible. But obviously can't do that. Chris would definitely give you a ticket.
I was so bad. I didn't shoot a single fish. I mean, every time I had a great opportunity, I forgot to push the reel. So it just bloop.
Yeah.
Fell off the end. I felt stupid, but it was a lot of fun.
and with that trip, you know, I want to make sure that we give a huge shout out to Kurt with Edge Bow Fishing. They're a huge supporter of that trip. They bring pretty much all their guide boats. They provide bows, extra bows for people if the boat captains that come don't have extras.
They just did their sixth annual. It's the Freedom Fighters bow shoots for, you know, bow fishing at nighttime. So it's their sixth one they just did for us. So pretty cool. A lot of long night, a lot of work, you know, a lot of fish. So they also do a lot of, they do a pig roast that night too before it all begins and a lot of giveaways and prizes and stuff. So I remember, I think I was there the year you went, Eric, just briefly to sell some merchandise. I think that's 2 years ago now, but I know you got hooked and you ended up buying, I think, a gift certificate for another bow fishing trip from us, actually.
I did. Yeah, I still haven't used it. It's still...
we got to get you on that.
Under my bed. But yeah, I mean, I haven't been able to go to a ton of, you know, the trips, but, you know, every time I go on one, it's such a memorable time. It's nice to just get away, relax, you know, take my mind off of, at least now, physical pain or, you know, just work stress. It's just when I'm out there to do something. You know, I wish I could go to more, but, you know, I definitely love supporting you guys and being a part of the organization in any way I can. I feel like I do a better job helping other people rather than probably helping myself, but.
I think we all say that.
Yeah, that's a pretty common theme with everyone that we serve. You know, they'd rather see someone else be able to go on one of the trips, even though, you know, everyone that's either served in the military or law enforcement is just as deserving as the next guy. You know, whether you think that you've had it easier than someone else, I mean, you still signed up to do what majority of the country isn't willing to do. So
I was going to say too, that, speaking with Eric, you know, early on before his amputation too, you know, there's a lot of question marks for you, you know, when it came to living arrangements, even with your house, you know, and the community did a pretty good job of, you know, huddling around you and helping you stand up, you know, with alterations to your home and whatnot, so we can get you through your immediate amputation, you know, and then beyond that too, which actually put you in a new house, which is pretty awesome. So do you want to talk about like what that process looked like, you know, when you decided to cut your leg off?
Before we get into the new house, Chris just like breezed over giving himself credit for helping coordinate so much of the stuff whenever Eric was getting ready to go into the hospital, you know, clean up the house, providing food for him. He did a ton of work, and all of that was from, you know, everyone's personal money that, you know, people with HHO and people outside of HHO, you know, jumped up to assist. And Chris helped coordinate that, or he did coordinate that whole thing. So
I can't take full credit. Alicia did a lot. Alicia Hinton, big shout out to her for helping out with Eric and doing a fundraiser. And that was outside of HHO time. So not only did she have HHO on her plate, but she did stuff with Eric too. And, you know, Eric and I talked about every day, you know, leading up to your amputation and throughout. And the other day I was scrolling through my phone and I saw a picture of your leg right after the surgery. And every time it makes me jump.
Yeah. It's like a hammerhead shark.
Oh man.
It was brutal. It was pretty swollen, but yeah, I mean, leading up to the surgery was just, you know, a lot of struggle to that too. I think you and I, Chris, even before it all happened, we're talking. I had a delay in my surgery, you know, which mentally, you know, threw me way back. I had, you know, when you prepare for something like this, you know, even though you're ready for it mentally, you still have to prepare yourself. And I was ready to, you know, go into surgery, like September 4th, I think is when it was.
Yeah.
And then they had seen that I had a blood clot in July and they wanted me blood clot free for over 90 days in order to do the surgery. Wasn't discussed in the beginning and, you know, plans changed. I made a lot of life plans for my wife and my kids and everything to try to get as much as I could done before surgery. And then it like didn't happen. So mentally it freaked me out. Cause then we had to reschedule it and, you know, just, it was another 30 days of thinking, you know, okay, can't get a blood clot. I need to just get this over with. And
COVID.
Yeah. COVID. That was rough. I mean, we'll just go straight to that. I mean, I got into surgery. You know, this is a big surgery in my opinion for most people. And I had to do it alone. And
I'd say it's a big surgery for anyone, not just most people.
Yeah.
And a willing surgery at that.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and I had to go into the Mayo by myself. You know, no family members were allowed. That was hard. You know, I feel like the nursing staff was really good to me and to help me out and be there for me. I went into surgery. I woke up, you know, things were different, obviously. And I was alone again. So it was hard, you know. I had my leg amputated on my son's second birthday or third birthday. So I'll never forget the day I lost my leg because it's my son's birthday, which to me is special now because I celebrate his birthday, not my leg. So it's a good way to deflect off of that situation, but
yeah, being able to find positive in that is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I spent 3 days at the hospital and, all I could do was, you know, call my kids and FaceTime them and call on the phone and they didn't get to see their dad, for a few days. So that was definitely really hard. And then just coming back home and having my kids reject me was pretty rough. You know, dad had changed and lost a leg and they just thought that I'd never be normal again. And this was their, you know, childish opinion, I guess, you know, but it was hard. There was a lot of pain and then just couldn't do much. And my wife did so much more than I could ever imagine. And just coordinating, yeah, with Chris and Alicia. I mean, you think about, I've always thought about like the types of people that come together and band together for people that, you know, suffer or go through traumatic experiences, and I just never thought that I would be on the reciprocating side or ever would need that. And that was a hard part for me when I talk about humbling myself, was having to, like, you know, message somebody and say, can you get me some meals? My wife is, you know, mentally going insane, trying to help me and take care of two kids, and COVID, of course. So, you know, kids were virtually learning from home, which doesn't make it any easier. And she just needed the help. A lot of people helped me out. Trying to remember the name.
Invisible Wounds Project.
Invisible Wounds. Yeah, Invisible Wounds Project helped fund a ramp / you know, deck off the back, so I could get from my car onto like a wheelchair or a scooter. And then I was living in my Four Seasons porch for 3 months, and they helped with that, as along with a few people from my church that came over and built it. And, you know, the VA actually came through too with a ramp in the front. And just a bunch of people volunteered to help. You know, I think I had some doors widened so that I could actually use the restroom on my main level. I had a shower put in my laundry room so that I could shower, because I had a 3-level house and, you know, nothing but a toilet and a sink on the main level. So it was really hard to, you know, just do what I needed to do on a daily basis.
Sorry, I touched a button I wasn't supposed to.
Oh, yeah, you're good.
It was a little while after the invitation, but you were actually the recipient from, I believe it was, what, Hy-Vee and the Minnesota Vikings, right?
Yeah, so Shane Hudella, president of United Heroes League. He's actually
running for the House right now.
He is, yeah, right in Rochester, Hastings, Cottage Grove area. So he put me in for something like the Minnesota Wild, Minnesota Vikings. I can't remember what it was actually called. And, you know, out of the blue, they showed up with food gift cards and, you know, the ultimate tailgating package, you know, a grill and chairs, and just all the stuff they brought wasn't, you know, necessary, but it was, you know, I still go back to it as, like, my kids were so excited to see all this and be a part of this. And, you know, for them, it was super memorable, as well as for me. But, you know, half the stuff I got from them, I'll be honest, I gave it away to other people that have helped out with stuff. You know, I had half of it already. I didn't need a second grill, and there's people that helped me out, and then, you know, gifted a TV that they gave me away. And, you know, it was super cool. You know, was able to give back to some people with some food too, that just gave a lot to me. And especially those that I knew really didn't have the money or to give in the first place, but they did. And, you know, that doesn't go without, you know, saying that I felt like I needed to give back to them, you know, with what I was blessed with. So.
And then you received some help too from the People's Patriot Project. They came in and helped out with the Christmas adventure for you, right?
Yeah. So they were, so we'll just rewind a little bit, but, you know, Alicia did an awesome thing and set a benefit together. We had a ton of random bills that popped up, especially with modifications and other things for the house too, that we were able to fundraise everything at this charity event, shut down the GoFundMe because everything was, you know, fulfilled. We didn't need anything else. And it was super cool to see everybody come out. I know I cried a lot because Bell Bank donated a significant amount of money, which was really cool. They didn't know me, and they did a big thing. And then, the People's Patriot Project donated me this Christmas experience. And, you know, it was the first one they, like, had really done. And it was really memorable for me and my family. They came and they got us a Christmas tree. They came and helped decorate. They brought, you know, a bunch of hot cocoa to the house with the kids, and it was a lot of fun. And then they proceeded to, you know, book us some hotels and take us on a VIP experience of, I'm already forgetting the name of the light show in Duluth.
That'd be Bentleyville.
Bentleyville. There you go.
Yep. Pretty awesome
show. So yeah, it was really cool. It was COVID, so it was a drive-through year. You couldn't walk through it like you normally could. And we pulled up, and I swear there were 2,000 cars lined up. And, you know, they were like, don't worry about it. We already got this worked out. And we just – we passed everybody up. The security let us in, and we got in right away. It was like – it's very presidential. I'd never been in something where I felt like, you know, you can just pass everybody up. I felt kind of bad. But then just as it started, I've never been to it. And the light show and listening to my kids just be so excited after, like I said, so much rejection and just standoffish, you know, behavior from them from everything that had happened. And to hear them just be so excited and we're driving through there, you know, I just smiled and cried. It was awesome.
You know, touch on the rejection from the kids. You know, you being military, you know, people see that all the time, you know, going on deployments or leaving for training and coming back. And, you know, there's kind of the expectation like, hey, you know, life has changed a little bit for everyone at home. But I can imagine going through that, you know, already being home and, you know, going through, you know, I don't want to say going through, you know, a simple surgery because it's not simple at all, but being gone for a few days because of a surgery and then coming back and having that happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think like deployments, like the time away or just the disconnection that you have by not being able to be together. I mean, that's what I experienced like being home with them. I mean, I went from dad wrestling on the couch with his son or, you know, doing certain things with daughter, watching a movie or other things to being just laid up in a bed with a huge cast and, you know, having to tell my kids, oh, be really careful. Don't jump on the bed. Don't, you know, anything could hurt dad. It just, you know, I think it hurt them that they couldn't just be normal with me and do certain things. And it was a hard process, you know,
a lot of emotions.
Yeah. I couldn't do much for, you know, 2 months. Honestly, I didn't have a leg. I couldn't walk. I'm on a walker. I mean, it was in the worst pain I've ever experienced for 2 months with all the nerve pain, which thank God I don't still have that now like it was. But it was, you know, a lot of taking medications and pain pills and, you know, sleeping a lot because of that and just not being there. It was hard for my kids to, you know, understand like, oh, yep, you're home from school. Dad's laying in bed. Go upstairs, play in your room or just leave him alone. And yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And then earlier you talked about, you know, going through the fitment of the prosthetics. You know, I'm sure that kind of takes you back into, you know, the not being able to do stuff. And I saw this weekend, or I think it was this weekend, you actually posted something, you know, for all the people listening, kind of, you know, what's the process look like of going through the fitment? Because like your what you do have left of your leg does change over time. And yeah, you have to get that adjusted.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as simple as like, you know, it was a lot nicer when I had my leg because, you know, if your shoes don't fit and they don't work, you just go buy new ones, right? It's all good. It just doesn't work that way with a prosthetic. When it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. And, you know, I've learned even now with my leg being pretty good and using it, you know, 12, 16 hours a day, when it doesn't fit, it's a wheelchair day. And, you know, all of us are super busy with what we do in our lives and I'm trying to run a business and, you know, I'm blessed to have a nice wheelchair, but it's not my ideal way of operating in a day. It definitely makes things a lot harder, right? I mean, I go from walking with a prosthetic and getting in my vehicle to grabbing my crutches and my wheelchair, crutching with no leg, putting the wheelchair in the back of my truck, crutching back to the truck, getting in and, you know, and the process repeats itself over. And yeah, it's hard both physically when a leg doesn't fit and mentally, because I would say, especially now being in a better place, it's harder when things don't work because, you know, I went from no leg to seeing what life could be like with a prosthetic when it's good. And then when I can't use it, it mentally destroys me. Sometimes it frustrates me a lot. Like, you know, I get angry. Like I should just be able to put my leg on and walk out the door and go do my thing, and I can't. And, you know, the first year after my leg, I was surprised how quickly I could walk, to be honest. I put my first prosthesis on 12 weeks after surgery and took my first steps. It's feels and is a lot different than it does now. I'll tell you that. Was very swollen. You know, the more I forced myself to put it on and walk, even through new pain, it actually helped me heal a lot faster. And, but yeah, I mean, there's been countless times where my leg shrinks down and then my prosthesis doesn't fit. And I've spent probably 40 days in the past year driving down to the Limb Lab in Rochester to have them fix or remake or, you know, tweak my prosthetics so that I can walk. It's totally different feeling, right? I mean, I can't feel my toes. I don't have any, but it's different.
Yeah. With that, you know, I've heard stories of like the ghost limb or whatever.
Phantom
pains. Is that something that you face at all?
All the time. I mean, when I say I can't feel my toes, I mean, I can't wiggle them, but yeah. I can feel my toes right now tingling. It's, you know, some people, I guess I've heard, you know, before I had my leg amputated, like they get really frustrated and it's painful. I guess mentally I've tried to just spin it like, I know my leg's not there, but I can still feel my toes, and it makes me feel like I still have a limb that I know isn't there. In a weird way, it makes me feel a little more normal. You know, there's some days where I get some pretty strong phantom pains that feel like you're sticking your finger in a light socket, and those are uncomfortable, and, you know, happen when I'm driving a golf cart or driving my car down the road, and a few times have almost put me in a ditch. They've been so, you know, painful, but
those the most, nerves, the right? Part,
yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, you know? That's crazy. And then, like, you ever catch yourself, like, feel like your foot itches or something, like start to reach down and try to itch it or anything?
Oh, yeah, all the time. They've tried to tell me, like, there's, like, a mirror trick where you can look at it in a mirror and pretend to itch it, and it gets rid of it. It hasn't worked for me, but.
Well, that's interesting. How many prosthetics have you been through now?
Oh, man, 12.
It's a lot.
12 in the last 2. Yeah. So, I mean, the first year, about every month to month and a half, I had to go back and get a, you know, I've had like the same foot piece almost the entire time. But the socket that holds my leg, the more, like I said, the more active, the less atrophy that you get. And then, you know, it's time for them to make another one. So you always want it to fit snug and, you know, to not damage anything. But yeah, I went through probably close to 12 already. My leg hasn't really changed in volume in the past 5 months. So now I've actually call it upgraded to just a better, more realistic feeling system. You know, it's all suction and air, so it seals. And to be honest, the first time I put it on and started walking, I honestly felt like I had my normal leg back.
So, huh. Pretty totally advanced different. Technology.
Yeah. But the downside is, like, you know, Dan, like you said, like last weekend, I couldn't get my leg to seal the air. So it was just my legs just floating around in there, wobbling around, and doesn't feel secure. And I had a lot of stuff like the HHO barbecue and some stuff going on Sunday that I just mentally was like, I can't be in a wheelchair this weekend. You know, the Limb Lab was really cool, and somebody came out on a Saturday morning and helped fix it. Spent 2 hours with me just trying to figure out what was going wrong, and they fixed it, and, you know, it was good to go. But it was a frustrating experience to have something go wrong on a weekend and realize that prosthetic care is only Monday through Friday. Makes me want to, you know, start a new business of weekend care for amputees.
new business venture.
Yeah,
because you can't just, you know, go to the urgent care or anywhere like that to have them fixed up for you. Like it's got to be, you know, the Limb Lab or, you know, one of those services that do that.
Yeah, I've been starting to work with the VA now too. just with more activity limbs. You know, another downside that, you know, or plus side about being in the military and having this service connected is the ability to get everything back in my life, I feel like. You know, for the average person that hasn't served or loses a limb in a motorcycle accident, and health insurance only covers, you know, one leg. And then they'll only cover if you need modifications to that leg, just to basically you got your day-to-day leg.
When you mean one leg, you mean like one prosthetic.
One prosthetic, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
One prosthetic, you know, like if they want to, you know, learn to run or swim or have any specific activity legs or activity prosthetics, they got to pay for those out of pocket. And they're not cheap. I mean, my last leg was like $48,000.
Jeez.
Holy smokes. That's a lot of money for a leg.
Wow. Yeah. So I've been working with the VA, and, you know, I got my first water prosthetic last year, and I just got a new one made. And I was able to surf with it. So it's, you know, fully, you know, submergible into water, which has been huge for me. 'Cause the times, like, I've, again, with my children, I've been able to go to like a hotel on vacation and jump in the pool with them and do stuff. Whereas, you know, that was the hardest thing, I think, last year was I didn't have a water leg, and I went to Miami and I went to the Dells, both with lots of water and ocean. And I had to sit on the beach and watch my kids play in the water. And then, you know, walk around the pool area at the Dells and not be able to actually go in the water. So whether the minute I could get in the water with this leg or go on a boat or jump in the water, like, it just mentally, it made my kids so happy.
I believe it. That's a lot of, that'd be tough, you know, just limiting. I mean, in general, your life's limited as is, but, you know, when it comes to affecting family life, that'd be pretty catastrophic, really.
Yeah. But it's been nice. I mean, like I said, the VA has been great. They're working on, you know, where I'm at now, I'm working on getting a running leg so I can actually start getting more active and,
running gross.
Yeah, but the leg I'm getting is like a hybrid. So some people get a running prosthesis to go run on the track and run 10 miles every day. That's not going to be me.
Are you getting one of those sweet, like, half moon spring legs?
Yeah, so it's similar. It's that, but it also has a foot. So
okay.
It is a spring, but you can, I would wear a normal shoe with it. So it'd be one like I could wear when I'm out and about on a walk with the family. And then if I wanted to break out and do a light jog, it's meant for that too.
You still have one real leg, so you won't be as fast.
Right.
It's yeah. Like those, you remember those like moon shoes that you could get like way back in the day.
Yeah.
And it's just a little pep in your step with the
I feel like my new leg is like a, you know, the old Reebok pumps, because I got to pump my leg like six times to get it sealed. And feel
that's
like
crazy.
I'm pumping up my shoes to lock it in.
Well, it's just pretty impressive to see what technology and the advancements that have happened over the years. And, you know, it's good to hear that technology is out there for people, you know, even incidents that do occur where they might take a limb, or even if it's, you know, something that's life altering and you make that decision on your own. It's good to know that help is there, and whether or not it be cheap or not, but it's available. Right. You know, you can go sell two of your used legs and go buy a boat now. So
yeah, I just keep outfitting the legs so I can keep using them.
You just go on Marketplace on Facebook and put a used prosthetic out there.
Yeah. You know, it's sad. They actually like when stuff stops fitting and like, you switch your system, they actually just destroy it.
Well, I mean, I understand why, though. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of potential liability issues around, you know, it going to someone else.
Yeah, it's just hard to see because, you know, like I said, I'm blessed to have the VA to give me all these extra activity legs, and to think about, you know, one of mine being destroyed that could work for somebody else that, you know, can't afford it, you know, it'd be nice, but yeah.
But they all need their own thing, you know, that works for them. And you know, I understand why. I mean, I know your sentiment too, but
yeah, it'd be nice. Like, you know, if someone that there's no way that they were ever going to be able to afford it, you know, waive that liability, take it off of, you know, whatever, whatever company's doing it and be able, right, to, be able to use those legs rather than destroying a $48,000 leg.
It's wild. That's a lot.
But
well, cool.
We're coming up on the hour here. You know, most of the time when we come to the end of these, we ask people, you know, what advice would you have for, you know, supporting HHO, or, you know, why, you know, veterans or law enforcement should take the leap of, you know, getting involved with the organization. I'm gonna put you on the spot and ask you something a little bit different. You know, with everything that you faced, you know, over the last few years with, you know, the leg problem, the blood clots, the starting a new business and everything, you know, is there, if you had to give, you know, someone one piece of advice for, you know, life and overcoming adversity, you know, what would that be?
Yeah. You know, I think for me, it's just patience. You know, patience has been something that I've had to learn, you know, and in the same time being humble too. I mean, it's just right after losing a leg, I wanted to do everything I did before. And it's just, to this day, it's not happening as fast as I want it to happen. But I know that I'm going to recover fully and that I'm going to be doing more and more. So it's just, I've learned to be patient for sure. And I'd tell other people that too, like no matter what you're going through or, you know, what you're dealing with, you know, I think a lot of us want instant gratification and it just to get better overnight. And it's not going to happen. And it's realizing that it's not going to happen and just have that patience that if you do the right thing and, you know, move on the right steps that, and have that patience that in the end, it's going to work itself out.
Oh, I like it. That's, you know, the key for, you know, anything. I think, you know, have some patience, be humble about everything. So, excellent advice.
Everything happens for a reason, and you just got to be patient about it.
Facts.
So, cool.
But yeah, Eric, we appreciate you taking the time, you know, out of your busy schedule. I know we've got you sitting at the shop, and it's what, 8, 9 o'clock there now, I think.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock over there. So definitely appreciate you taking the time to not only come on the podcast, but also, you know, take the time that you do when you come out and support all the various events that we have going on. I know we ask you to come to a ton of them. They're in Minnesota. And it's by no means a thing that you have to do, but, you know, you willingly take the time and the resources that you have to make sure that those things are wildly successful for us.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and, you know, I appreciate everything that you guys have done for me and do for other people, and I hope more and more people see HHO as a, you know, organization that they want to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to be a part of the organization, Chris is laughing at me because I just said, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I am. Yep.
And if you want to be a part of the organization and you're a veteran or law enforcement officer, make sure to go on our website, which you'll hear at the end, and request to join. And you'll be prompted to answer some questions. Or for those that are on social media, you can find us on Facebook. We've got two closed groups, Hometown Hero Outdoors Community and Hometown Hero Outdoors Trips. So make sure to join those. Keep an eye out for events that we have going on and then the various trips. Chris has got his finger up like he's about to tell me something. Here.
Yeah, no, two other quick things too. You know, if you want to learn more about Eric and his experience with HHO, we have a testimonial from him from a couple years ago that's on our YouTube page. So if you look for Hometown Hero Outdoors on YouTube, you can see Eric's testimonial. It's actually in his shop, so you guys can get a glimpse into what his shop looks like. It's a beautiful place. So then one other thing too is, you know, big advancements happening in the mental health world too, you know, when it comes to being able to reduce that crisis that people might be going through. So recently the suicide hotline did adapt, and they have changed their phone number. It was 11 digits before, down to 3 digits now. You can text or call #988, you know, in a time that you may be in a dark area or need some assistance or someone to talk to. So that's some pretty big stuff. I'm glad that they're doing that, moving forward on that. So if you find yourself in a dark area, you know, reach out to us or one of our individuals who's been through assist training, or calling this suicide hotline at #988.
Awesome. And on that note, Eric, thanks again for coming on. And until next time, we're looking forward to seeing you guys out on the water and in the woods.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.